Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak Jacobson. This is recording number 145 in this series entitled, What Makes a Place Holy? Isn't God Everywhere? This class was recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York, during the winter of 5762.
Tonight's class, as all of our learning and prayers and mitzvahs these days, is dedicated to our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land. As we share with them in their unbearable grief and pain and agony, I also wanted to apologize to all those of you who came last week while I did not show up. It was really beyond my control, as I did spend Shabbos in Western Florida conducting a Shabbaton, and I was supposed to go onto the plane at 6:45 in the morning, Sunday morning, and land in JFK Airport at 10:30 a.m., which would give me enough time to arrive in Borough Park for 8:30 p.m. But fate had it otherwise, and we remained strangled in the airport till 5 p.m. And finally, when we did get on a plane, they notified us that we will have to land in Washington before we can arrive to JFK. So when we landed in Washington at 8:15, I realized I will not be able to make it to the class, and I actually arrived in JFK close to midnight. So I did have enough time to prepare the class, but no audience to deliver it to, as the people on the plane were very, very frustrated, and they were not in the mood of listening to a lecture on chapter 53 of Tanya. But I did have my laptop, and thus I can sit and prepare the class in frustration, but in serenity. As an introduction to the final chapter of the first section of Tanya, the 53rd chapter, Perek Nun Gimel, which discusses at length the tablets, the Luchos HaBris, the tablets of the covenant that Hashem gave Moshe to transmit to the Jewish people, I want to share the following story, which I think is extremely relevant, not only to understand and apply the theme of the chapter, but to comprehend its relevance to our lives today. after the war, a Holocaust survivor, a survivor of Auschwitz, decided to go visit his one-time spiritual master, who was the famed Rebbe of the Hasidic dynasty of Ger, of Gur, known as the Imre Emes, Rebbe Avraham Mordechai Alter. The Imre Emes escaped the war with some members of his family and then settled in Jerusalem, where he passed away in 1948. Due to the fact that Jerusalem was under siege at the time, he was buried in the courtyard of his shul in Jerusalem. This Holocaust survivor, who decided to go visit his once spiritual master, the Geri Rebbe, was deported to the death camps with his wife, with his children, with his relatives, and his entire community. This man's wife and children were gassed, all of his relatives decimated, and the entire community wiped out. He emerged from the ashes a lonely human being in a vast world that has silently swallowed the blood of 6 million Jews. He had nobody, he had nothing. In the camps, he lost one more thing. He lost his God. Though an observant Jew, a Hasidic Jew, a student, a disciple of the Geri Rebbe, yet after what he experienced on his own flesh, he couldn't continue to believe in a God that could allow for an Auschwitz, a Dachau, a Treblinka, a Buchenwald. And although after the war he made Aliyah to the Holy Land, to Eretz Yisrael, he completely abandoned Jewish practice and observance. His beard and his side lacks he did not need to remove. The Nazis did that for him. His yarmulke he did not need to remove. The Nazis did that for him. But he made sure not to reclaim these elements of his identity after the war. Yet, he missed his once upon a time Rebbe. And although quite uncomfortable and awkward, he missed the Imre Emes. So he decided that he's going to visit him in Tel Aviv. He was then in Tel Aviv. The Geri Rebbe himself lost large chunks of his family during the Holocaust. In addition, they estimate that around 250,000 of his followers perished in Poland. So he lost 250,000 disciples and Hasidim. He and some members of his immediate family managed to escape Warsaw in 1940, and they arrived in Israel soon after. When the Geri Rebbe heard the story from this Jew who related to his master his entire experience, he broke into sobs. And the man and his Rebbe sat together, mourning what they had lost. And they just sat, him at one side of the table and he at the other side of the table, weeping profusely. After a long period of crying, the Geri Rebbe wiped his tears and he told this Jew the following in Yiddish. And this is what he said. In Moshe Rabbeinu's farewell to his people during those weeks before he passed away, Moshe recounts the moment when he descended from the Sinai mountain with the two luchos, with the two divine tablets that had engraved in them the Ten Commandments to present them to the Jewish people. And in Parshas Ekev, Moshe describes, he says, Va'erid min ahor, I descended from the mountain. The mountain was still burning with fire. Ha'har boyer ba'esh. And the two tablets, Ushtei luchos, Habriz b'yaday, the two tablets of the covenant were in my hands. Moshe tells the Jewish people, I saw that you have sinned to God creating a golden calf. You were so quick to turn from the path that Hashem has prescribed for you. So Moshe says, Ve'etfois eshtei haluchos, I grabbed the two tablets and I threw them down from my two hands. Ve'ashlichem me'al shtei yadai, Ve'ashabrem le'einechem, and I smashed them before your eyes. I smashed them before your eyes. So some of the commentators, the Abarbanel and other commentators, ask the question that based on the well-known axiom of the meticulousness of each word in Chumash, Moshe's expression, I smashed them before your eyes, seems superfluous. Suppose Moshe has turned around and broken the tablets out of the view of the Jewish people. Would have it lessened the tragedy? It happened to be that he smashed the luchos before their eyes. But why was it important for Moshe to emphasize that the breaking occurred before your eyes? And if it would have not occurred before their eyes, if he would have turned around and broken them, it would have had the same tragic effects and the same negative consequences. Why the need to say, I smashed them before your eyes? You have seen, you have witnessed the breakage. So the spiritual master of Ger turns to this Jew and he says as follows. He says, what Moshe Rabbeinu was telling the Jewish people is that I smashed the tablets only before your eyes. Va'ashabrim le'inechem, the shattering of the tablets occurred only before your eyes and only from your own vantage point. There exists a world, Moshe, the shepherd of the Jewish people, was saying, in which the tablets have never been broken. Le'inechem, they were broken. But there exists a reality, a higher reality, in which the tablets remain complete. And with tears in his eyes, he looked at this Jew and he said as follows. He said, as hard as it is for you and I to believe, I want you to know that the decimation of my 250,000 followers, the perishing of our families, our communities, and our people, occurred only before our eyes. There remains a world in which the Jewish people remain wholesome and complete. Beneath the surface of our perception, there exists a reality in which every single Jew, from Avram Avinu till today, is perfectly alive and vibrant. The day will come, the Rebbe of Ger said, when that world will be exposed, when Hashem will mend our broken tablets and our broken nation, and we will discover how the tablets were really never broken, and the Jewish people were always complete. Now, the previous Lubavitcher Rebbe related that when his father, known as the Rebbe Rashab, the fifth Rebbe of Lubavitch, taught him the Tanya, they finally arrived to chapter 53, the culminating chapter of the first section of Sefer Shalbeinim. And the Rebbe related, he said, it took 3 weeks for my father to learn with me the 53rd chapter. Not to compare the two types of lessons, but I hope that we will also achieve it in 3 weeks. And parenthetically. And the Rebbe, the previous Rebbe added, he said, my father instructed me that as an introduction to this chapter, I should on my own study all of the services that the Jewish community used to perform in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Holy Temple. All of the public services, to learn it in the Talmud, in Gemara, and in Halacha. And as part of chapter 53, which deals with the tablets and with the holy temples, as we shall see, my father explained to me all of the work, all of the services in the Beis HaMikdash from a spiritual and psychological and personal perspective. And he explained to me how these services are performed by the Jewish people till today in a spiritual sense. And he added that the service of the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, in today's day and age, that's performed through the Rebbe. In this chapter, characteristically, the Alter Rebbe addresses the spiritual reality of the Batei Mikdash. What the first Beis HaMikdash represented and what the second Beis HaMikdash represented. Including the spiritual reality of the present day Beis HaMikdash, which is Dalet Amos Shel Halacha, the four cubits of Torah. That's the first half of the chapter. The second half of the chapter, the Alter Rebbe returns to his favorite hero, that I'm sure we are familiar by now, whom we are by now familiar with, none other than the Beinoni. Although, at the surface, one could think that the Alter Rebbe, so to speak, forgot about the Beinoni, in the ecstasy and the deep transcendental themes that he invites us to explore in the 40s and in the 50s. It seems like he abandoned the Beinoni and all of his struggles and dilemmas and doubts and frustrations so eloquently explored in the earlier chapters of Tanya. Nonetheless, in a very fabulous way, at the end of chapter 53, the Alter Rebbe says, I didn't forget you, Beinoni. And he comes back and culminates the book, the section of the book, which is no doubt the Alter Rebbe's magnum opus, the Sefer Shel Beinonim, the book for the ordinary men, for the ordinary man with the profile of the Beinoni. I heard a story last night that there was a Jew, which today we would call a schnorrer, a Jew who collected money, and he came to the Seer of Lublin for an adava, for a contribution. He comes into the Seer of Lublin and he says, Rebbe, I'm not just a regular schnorrer. You do realize that I'm your fourth cousin once removed. And he demonstrates his entire yichus, his entire lineage to gain favor in the eyes of the Rebbe, because everybody knew that relatives, the Seer of Lublin, treated it in a special, unique way. So he thought he's going to get a greater contribution. The Seer of Lublin listens to the whole genealogy and he says, Avaita Karev. You're a very distant relative, and therefore he gives him the contribution that he gives to all people who come to collect money for their needs. The Jew may have been a schnorrer, but he wasn't a fool. That day, the Seer of Lublin was davening mincha, and he was the chazan. So during the repetition of the Amida, he begins the repetition, he says, Baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, Elokeinu v'Elokei Aviseinu, our God and the God of our fathers, Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. This guy on the other side of the shul screams, Vaitekroivim. Abraham, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are very, very distant relatives. Vaitekroivim. You're talking about God, you know, this is my God, he's the God of Avraham, of Yitzchak, of Yaakov. They're very, very remote relatives. So after Minchi called him in and he gave him the contribution that close relatives are deserving of. Now, I think that in a way is the essence of chapter 53. The struggle of the Beinoni is that God forever remains, you know, Avaita Karev, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. It's unlike the tzaddik, the perfectly spiritual human being who senses godliness in the most intimate and immediate fashion. The Beinoni forever vacillates between heaven and earth, between a self-centered perception of life and a godly perception of life. And that barrier, that remoteness, he never overcomes. And it's this struggle that the Alter Rebbe so embraced and granted so much meaning to. That the Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov can nonetheless be considered your God. Now, to understand the actual ideas conveyed in chapter 53, which are not easy, he employs here a lot of Kabbalistic terminology. Let us for a few moments recapture the theme being conveyed in these chapters. Chapter 51, Nun Aleph, which began the final unit of Likutei Amorim, 51, 53 constitute the final unit. The Alter Rebbe raised an interesting question. You remember what the question was? He asked, what is the meaning of the idea discussed often in Jewish sources and Torah sources of Ashras HaShchina, the dwelling of divinity? That in a particular place, in the Beis HaMikdash, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, in the Holy of Holies, there was an indwelling of the Shechina of godliness. Or we talk about particular places, other places, or particular people, in whom or in where there is Ashras HaShchina, there is an indwelling of the divinity. What is the meaning of this, when on the other hand the Zohar states, Leis Asar Ponimine, there is no place devoid of him? If the Shechina is to be found in every place, so how could you say that the Shechina dwells in a particular place, as in the Holy of Holies, in the chamber of Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we're discussing in the chapter, in the Torah sections of these weeks, Truma Tetzava? Less asar ponim in name eloichel aretz kvoidei. The Shechina is to be found everywhere. So what does it mean that in this place or in this person the Shechina dwells? To answer this question, he began his explanation in chapters 51 and 52. It is a profound explanation. It's very abstract. It's not easy. One has to learn it and relearn it and think about it again and again until you grasp what he's saying and you internalize it. But to convey the point, and I mentioned that this is not an easy answer. These are complicated chapters in Tanya. It's important to think about them, to let the concept grow on you. But the point is that in Chassidus, in Kabbalah, we always have to make a distinction. It is always necessary to differentiate between two things. Whenever we talk about God, about Hashem, a necessary distinction must be introduced. And that is a distinction between Hashem and between how we experience Hashem. Between Hashem as He is or as it is, because He is one of those words that belong to the latter category. And the nature of Hashem, how we talk about Him, experience Him, relate to Him, define Him. Hashem, as Hashem truly is, and even the term is a necessary attribute, a necessary definition introduced only in the second category, because we can't talk about existence in any other form rather than that which is familiar to us, so we say Hashem is. Even though Chassidus emphasizes that combination is an inaccurate combination. But we're not going to go there this evening. Hashem can't be experienced by any world or by any creature in the famous Zoharic term, Leis Machshavet Tfisa Beiklal. No thought, no being can experience Him, can grasp Him as He is. That's one element. Then there is Hashem as we experience Him. We may experience Him as intelligent, kind, creative, artistic. You may learn Torah and appreciate his wisdom. You may learn history and appreciate his providence. You may view nature, observe nature, and appreciate his artistry. All of these qualities are true. This personifies his wisdom. History personifies his providence. Nature embodies his art and his creativity. These are true qualities, but they do not express who or what he is. And we never have to confuse the two. What we experience about him does not encapsulate what he is. It comes from him. It reflects something which is true about him. But these qualities and characteristics do not capture his essence, just as the rays of the sun don't express the essence of the sphere that we call the sun in the Alter Rebbe's metaphor. Wisdom, intelligence, art, creativity, providence, and so on and so forth are qualities that come from Hashem, but this is not Hashem. It's the way we appreciate Him, it's the way we can relate to Him, but it's not Him. Just to give an incomplete example, nobody in his sanity will say, if you were to watch Professor Albert Einstein playing handball, in order to play handball, your brain has to be working. Right. As discussed at length in chapter 51, the function and role of the brain in every single detail what goes on in our life. Yet nobody is going to say, ah, you see how he threw that handball? That expresses his brain. You want to know what Albert Einstein's brain was capable of? The man knew how to throw a ball. It will actually be very humiliating and very, very inaccurate. It's true, it comes from his brain. It's produced by his brain. But it doesn't express what this brain is capable of. And it doesn't it doesn't express the contribution of this man's brain. This is an incomplete example. When you say, who is Hashem? He created the world. It's extraordinary quality. It doesn't express anything about him. All of these qualities that we attribute to Hashem do not tell his story. They do not tell his innate story. And the Alter Rebbe gave an example from our own soul. Our soul also has these two dimensions. When we talk about our soul, we must make the distinction. The soul as is, and the soul as experienced via the human brain. What the brain experiences in the soul is not the soul in its core and its essence. And this is a metaphor to Hashem as well. What we define and experience as the reality of godliness is true. Just as the rays of the sun really come from the sun. Just as the handball that was thrown was a product of Einstein's brain. But it doesn't capture what the reality of this brain is, what the reality of the soul is, what the reality of this God is. This dimension of godliness, the dimension of godliness that the world can talk about, that the world can relate to, that the world can experience. Godliness as a source for the world, which means defining a godliness as the spiritual electricity of the universe, the power plant of all of the worlds, the soul of the cosmos, which is not the story of what godliness is, but the definition of godliness as such a reality. This is what our sages meant when they used the term Shekhinah. The perceivable manifestations of Hashem's reality. Hashem's reality as defined in terms of the source of life for the universes. Life, which is light as well. It's good you said light, because it's the story of light, the light that comes from the sun. It doesn't tell the story of its source, although it comes from its source. That ray is what we call the Shekhinah. That ray is not to be underestimated. That's the God we know. That's the God we relate to, but it's not the sun. And all of these metaphors are still incomplete. But yet they are metaphors. This is what the Alter Rebbe called Haschalas Gilui Oirein Sof.
It's the beginning of the emergence of the light of the Ein Sof. What does it mean, the emergence, the revelation? It's the beginning of the process where we can begin talking about Ein Sof. Where we can develop a vocabulary, a terminology, a lexicon for the Ein Sof, for the Endless One. Where we can talk about an infinite creator, endless wisdom. These are all vocabularies that can begin in the realm of Shekhinah. The Alter Rebbe also called it Malchus da Atzilus. The attribute of Malchus of the world of Atzilus. Based on this axiom, he answers his question raised above, discussed above, in the beginning of chapter 51. Les asar ponimine, there is no space devoid of him. And hashras hashchina, the indwelling of the shchina in particular places or people, are dealing with two distinct realities from our perception. When we say les asar ponimine, there is no space devoid of him, there is no particle or wave in which he is not present, we are dealing with Hashem, the Ein Sof itself, which is found everywhere and felt nowhere. The Shekhinah, when we talk about an indwelling of the Shekhinah in a particular place, we're talking about the dimension of godliness that the world can experience, this is found and present in particular locations, in particular places. In fact, in each world it is present according to its capacity. So again, we have to understand, the world was not created through the Shekhinah. The world was created through the Hashem. And there's one God who created everything, and He is not indivisible, and He's not fragmented, and He's not dichotomized. He's one singular entity. But when we talk about God, when we talk about the Creator, what do we experience? What do we feel? What do we relate to? That which we relate to when we talk about God, that's called the Shekhinah. And that reflection of godliness, godliness as it Hashem, as He allows Himself to be experienced, as the power plant for the world, that dwells and is found in particular places. Just as the soul, as it is experienced by the brain, as the power source for the body, is found in the brain. That is the seat of the soul. And from the brain it's transmitted to all of the other organs of the body. Is it clear? You understand? It's not so easy to understand what he's saying. It's a very difficult concept. It's very subtle. It's very abstract. So even when you talk, right? So even when you talk about that place where the Shekhinah is present, Hashem is present there. The Ein Sof is present there. From Hashem's perspective, there's no part of me is Ein Sof, part of me is Shekhinah. Shekhinah is godliness, how we address it, how we define it. It's how the brain picks up what the soul is. And that element, Hashem, designates particular places where that is manifest, where that is present, where that dwells. The bridge that transmits the Shekhinah to the worlds, just as in the human being, what is the bridge that transmits the soul to the body? It's the brain. And the bridge that transmits, communicates the Shekhinah to the worlds. Again, Shekhinah is the energy of godliness as experienced, as related to in the worlds. The world is created through the Ein Sof, but the worlds don't relate to that reality. What we relate to of the Ein Sof is the Shekhinah. We are the ones who make the differentiation in God. That's why I explained to you Davke Chassidus and Kabbalah, which talks the most about the unity of Hashem, introduces millions and quantillions of levels in godliness. Because precisely if you want to be serious and you want to talk about the unity of Hashem, you forever have to make the distinction of who He is and how He's experienced. Both. We'll soon see. He'll just talk about it. It's a necessary distinction that we have to make. And thus, the bridge that transmits the Shekhinah to all of the worlds, Ein Sof doesn't need a bridge. But the Shekhinah's bridge, that's the cosmic brain, and that's Torah. Torah is really higher than the Shekhinah. Shekhinah is Malchus Da'atzilus, and Torah is Chochma Da'atzilus. And therefore, Torah can serve as a veil, as a garment that will not be nullified in the presence of the light of the Shekhinah. So the Shekhinah encloses itself in Torah, which is defined as the attributes of Chochma Bina Das in each world, the intellectual, cognitive, divine attributes in each world, and it's through the Chabad, through the Torah of that world, that the Shekhinah is then transmitted and allocated to all of the existing creatures and souls and angels of that world, shaping them, molding them, animating them, vivifying them, and relating to them. The Chachma Bina Das of every world, that is called the shrine of the Holy of Holies of that world, the Kodesh HaKadoshim of that world. And there is Ashras HaShekhinah. There is the dwelling, the seat, the abode, the manifest expression and presence of the Shekhinah of that relates to that particular world. And from that abode, it's then transmitted to the entire world. And in the end of chapter 52, he enumerated the process of evolution, and he said that the Shekhinah, which is Malchus Da'atzilus, creates and produces the world of Bria through first enclosing itself in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of Bria, which is Chabad of Bria, and Malchus of Bria. The Shekhinah creates the world of Yetzirah by enclosing itself in Malchus of Bria, and then in Chabad of Yetzirah, in Kodesh HaKadoshim of Yetzirah, and then in Malchus of Yetzirah. It creates the world of Asiyah, again by enclosing itself, by Malchus de Atzilus, the Shekhinah, enclosing itself in Malchus de Bria, in Malchus de Yetzirah, in the Shekhinah of Yetzirah, and then in Chabad of Asiyah, and in Malchus of Asiyah. So in every world, the Shekhinah is transmitted to that particular world, creating the world, sustaining the world, only via the brain, the Chabad, the Torah of that universe. Does this mean that the Shekhinah creates the world? Hashem creates the world. There's one Hashem who creates all of the worlds. But the worlds, as they experience godliness, what do they experience from the Creator? How do they define that which created them? They define it as Shekhinah. And each world has its definition of Shekhinah, based on its own spiritual level and gradation and rank, how aloof, how sensitive it is. The Shekhinah of how it's defined in Bria is not how the Shekhinah is defined in Yetzirah, not how the Shekhinah is defined in Asiyah.
On the personal consciousness.
Yes. Right? Just for example, a human being has a brain, a frog has a brain. They both have brains. Both brains are extremely crucial, but you're not going to compare this brain to this brain. What the brain of a man experiences, a human being experiences, is not what the brain of a frog experiences. Although for the frog, the brain is his or its central nervous system, that without it, the frog can't function for a single moment. So it depends what type of brain, and in people themselves, you can't compare this brain to that brain, and so on and so forth. And the same is on a higher level. There are different brains, and these brains allow, the brain of a frog allows the soul of a frog to vivify a frog. That brain is shaped for the Shechina of the frog, so to speak. Does it mean the Ein Sof is not in the frog? Of course the Ein Sof is in the frog. But what could the frog relate to? It has to relate to its energy that will tailor itself to its own identity. And for that it needs its brain. And the same is, this is a metaphor for the worlds as well. Well, I think I stam chose a frog. In Perek Shira, you mean? In Perek Shira. In Perek Shira, we have recorded the whole melody of the frog. The frog told David HaMelech. Perek Shira is a famous medrash. It's called Perek Shira, chapter of song. It's one of the most cryptic. And it's a very interesting type of document of our sages. It describes the melodies of the various animals to Hashem each morning. And it describes how the frog told David HaMelech, you're proud of your book of Psalms, of Tehillim. It pales in comparison to my daily praises to the Almighty. But still a frog is a frog, you know. A frog doesn't learn Tanya. Yeah. Alter Rebbe said it. Alter Rebbe said about the Maggid. The Maggid would walk often in the morning to streams. So the students didn't understand why. They thought he just wants to get a breeze of fresh air. So the Maggid was an ill person. He had horrible infections in both of his legs. You know, he can barely walk. So the Maggid walked with crutches. So the Alter Rebbe told one of his friends, he says, what do you think? He's just going to the streams to catch some fresh air. He's going to listen to the shir of the Tzfardim in the morning, to the melody sung by the frogs in the morning. So the brain of the creature takes from the soul what it can relate to, and it transmits to the body what it can relate to. And different creatures have different brains based on the energy that has to be transmitted to their body. And this is the story of all of the universes as well. The Ein Sof itself permeates everything. But that's the Ein Sof that permeates everything, and the Ein Sof creates everything. Shechina, again, is how we experience the Ein Sof. It's what we know about the Ein Sof. Each world experiences the Shechina in a different way. And in each world, the Shechina could be transmitted to it, to relate to it, to sustain it, to create it in its own perception, only through the brain of that world, which is the Torah of that world, which is the Chabad of that world, which is the Kodesh HaKadoshim of that world. That is the seat of the soul, which we call Shechina. The dimension of godliness that is perceivable by the worlds. And that is in its particular places and not in other places. Just like the soul is in the brain, that dimension of the soul, and not in other places. Now we'll continue in chapter 53. Perek Nun Gimel. In this chapter, he dealt with the Shechina of Atzilus, the Shechina of Bria, Malchus of Bria, the Shechina of Yitzira, Malchus the Yitzira, which are all an extension of Malchus d'Atzilus. The Shechina of Atzilus is Malchus d'Atzilus. The Shechina of Bria is Malchus d'Atzilus, as is enclosed in Malchus d'Bria. Then there's Malchus d'Atzilus and Bria enclosed in Malchus of Yetzirah. That's the Shechina of the world of Yetzirah. Then there is Malchus d'Atzilus, Bria, Yetzirah enclosed in Malchus d'Asiyah. It's enclosed in the Shechina of Asiyah. And in every world, the Shechina can't function if not for the brain, which is the Torah, the Chabad of the world. So Malchus the Yetzirah, for example, the Shechina of Yetzirah, if it wants to now relate to the world of Asiyah, it has to first go through the brain of Asiyah. Malchus, Chachma Chabad of Asiyah. And then through Malchus the Asiyah, which is like the heart, it could then pump, allocate through the heart, the blood and the instructions and the commands to the entire organism of Asiyah, which is the entire world. Now, in this chapter, the Alter Rebbe will discuss Hashras, Hashchina, the indwelling of the Shechina in this physical world. In chapter 52, he went all the way to Malchus of Asiya, the spiritual Asiya. Here he will discuss the Shechina in this physical world. And apparently he chose this to be the final theme of the final chapter of Tanya, because in a way this constitutes the synopsis and final point of Tanya, the integration between Hashem and the world, between heaven and earth, between the Shechina and our reality, which is ultimately the calling and the mission of the Beinoni, who lives with both feet steeped in earth and nonetheless strives to connect to heaven. V'hine zogdal terebe v'hine now, k'shaho yabayis rishon kayom. When the first Beis HaMikdash, the first temple stood, Shaboy ho yarin v'aluchiz v'beis kotshi kadoshim, in which the Ark and the tablets of the covenant were housed in the Holy of Holies. We all know the first Beis HaMikdash was built through Shlomo HaMelech, through King Solomon, in the year, you know which year it was built? It was in the Hebrew calendar, the Jewish calendar, was built in the year Beis Tav Tav Kuf Chav Ches, which means 2928 since creation. 2,920 years after the creation of the world, and it was destroyed after 410 years. Yeah. It was destroyed in the year 3338. 3338, or Gimel Shin Lamed Ches, known as Gimel Shalach, when Hashem sent the Jewish people into exile. So it stood for 410 years. The Jewish people entered into the land of Israel in the year Beis Tav Pei Ches, 2488 since creation, 2488. They were liberated from Mitzrayim in 2448, traveled in the wilderness for 40 years, and in 2488, under the leadership of Yahushua, they came into the land. After 440 years living in the land, Shlomo HaMelech built the Beis HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. And in the western side of the Beis HaMikdash, there was the chamber known as Kodesh HaKadoshim, the Holy of Holies. And there, Shlomo HaMelech, in a very dramatic episode described in Masechta Shabbos, Daf Lamed, how Shlomo HaMelech had to plead with the portals to allow the Aron to come in. He placed the Ark and the tablets of stone, in which there were engraved the Ten Commandments that Hashem has communicated to the Jewish people at Sinai. Those tablets were placed in the Aron that Shlomo HaMelech placed in the Holy of Holies in Beis Kodshei HaKadoshim, in the western side of the edifice of his Beis HaMikdash on the mountaintop on Har HaBayis. So the Alter Rebbe says, during the time of the first Beis HaMikdash, which means for 410 years, Ha'is HaShechina, the Shechina, Shehi Malchus Datzilus, which is the level we define as Malchus Datzilus, as the Malchus quality, the sovereign or the kingship quality of the world of Atzilus, Shehi Pchinas Gilui Ein Sof Baruch Hu, namely, the revealed light of the endless one, blessed be he. That is what is Shechina. It's the Gilui Ein Sof Baruch Hu. It's as the light, how Hashem allows his light to become revealed, to become exposed, which means to be defined somewhat in a definition that is perceivable by us in some form. So the Shechina, which is Malchus Datzilus, Shoyresham, dwelled there in the Holy of Holies. As we said, that the Shechina always dwells in the Holy of Holies. So it dwelled in the Holy of Holies, Umalubashes Baseres Adibrus, and it was closed in the Ten Commandments, which were engraved upon the tablets found in the Ark and the Holy of Holies. So the Shechina, Malchus Datzilus, dwelled, it was present in the Holy of Holies, it was enclosed in the Ten Commandments, in the Ten Writings, the Ten Statements in the Luchas. And the Shechina dwelled there, yes, Sa'ez V'yeserais, far more intensely. Begilui Rav Atzum Yeser, with a greater and mightier revelation, Migiluya Beheichalois, Kotshe Kadashim Shalamaila Ba'ilam Asal Yainim, than its revelation in the chambers of the Holy of Holies above in the upper worlds. It rested and it dwelled in the Holy of Holies of the first Beis HaMikdash more intensely and more revealed than even the revelation of the Shekhinah of Malchus Atzilus in the chambers of Kodshei Kodashim of the higher worlds, which means the chamber Kodshei Kodashim of Asiya, the chamber of Kodshei Kodashim of Yitzira, the chamber of Kodshei Kodashim of Bria, which is Chabad, Chachma Bina Das of Bria, in which Shekhinah, Malchus Datsilas, dwells, as he explained before. And through that, all of the existences of Bria are created and sustained and related to. But in the Beis HaMikdash down here, we had a greater revelation of the Shekhinah than in all of the worlds, than in the Kodesh HaKadoshim of the higher worlds. Why? Zagdal Tereb. Ki Aseres HaDibris in Klolos HaTorah Kula. Because the Ten Commandments are the all-embracing principles of the entire Torah. Klolus HaTorah Kul. The Nafka and the Torah we explained before. The Nafka, the Torah derives Migoi Chachmeila, from the level we call Chachmeila, supernal wisdom. The Le'ela, Le'ela Malmedes Galia, which is far higher, and it transcends completely the world of manifestation, which we defined earlier in chapter 52 as Shekhinah, and the Torah comes, is an expression of Chachma of Atzilus, which transcends Malchus of Atzilus, the Shekhinah. It's Le'ela, Le'ela Me'almadiz Galia. And Aseres HaDibrois capture and embody the entire Torah, which is from Chachma, even higher than the Shekhinah of Malchus Atzilus. And Alter Rebbe said that this Torah, which comes from Chachma, makes a major evolutionary descent. In each world, the Torah descends another gradation, and it assumes a more tangible incarnation. So when the Torah descends to the world of Bria, it assumes the formulas that create the Gemara. The formulas behind the Gemara that we learn are a product of Bria. When the Torah descends in Yetzirah, the formulas of Mishnah are created, which is the formula of emotions. When the Torah descends in Asiya, the formula of Tanakh is created, which is the formula of stories. But where does the Torah come from? The Torah comes from Chachma. It's just in every world it descends and assumes a more tangible incarnation, and it becomes the brain, the garment in which the Shekhinah encloses itself. Now we all know Reb Sadia Gaon writes, he has a whole long explanation, Rashi actually quotes it in Parshas Mishpatim, that every single one of the 630 mitzvahs of the Torah is alluded to and hinted within the Aseres HaDvarim. Which means the Ten Commandments are not just 10 mitzvahs. These 10 statements, these 10 declarations that were given at Sinai, Hashem chose them to serve as the instruments through which He revealed Himself to the people once in history. The only time in history when Hashem exposed Himself to the world, because these 10 declarations really encapsulate every single mitzvah. Reb Sadia Gaon traces and shows every single mitzvah can be traced back, its origin and its nucleus to one of the 10 commandments. It's interesting, it also says in Svarim, that Aseres HaDibris, if you count the letters of Aseres HaDibris in Parashas Yisro, they make up 613 letters plus 7, 620 letters. From Anochi Hashem Elokecha till the last one, V'chol Asher L'Reyacha, is 620 letters. They correspond, each letter corresponds to one of the 613 mitzvahs, and the final 7, it says, to the 7 mitzvahs that were instituted by the rabbis.
Huh?
But there's officially 7 general. We're not talking about decrees. Decrees are fences. We're talking about positive institutions. For example, washing your hands before eating bread, the celebration of Chanukah, the celebration of Purim, saying Hallel. We're not talking about the many decrees and fences and cautions that were imposed by the rabbis. I know that goes far more than 7. They're enumerated, I could show you. They're enumerated.
So what defines them is that they're positive.
Yeah.
They're all mitzvahs asse.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, so Aseres Adibris are the synopsis of the entire Torah. And that's why Matan Torah, the giving of the Torah, is the event during which what happened during that event. Aseres Adibris were given because that's the synopsis of the whole Torah. Not only quantitatively, but qualitatively. It's not only they have 620 letters. Qualitatively, in Aseres Adibris, we have the entire intensity of Torah. The entire essence of Torah. So therefore, the Alter Rebbe is saying that the Aseres Adibris are higher than Malchus of Atzilus, because Malchus of Atzilus reveals the Ein Sof light to the world. It's Gilui Ein Sof to the world. And the Aseres Adibris really contain the essence of Torah that transcend even the formulas of Torah that it assumes during its descent. Aseres Adibris captures the pristine, original, quintessential quality of Torah, which is Chachma of Atzilus.